From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Wednesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parm, Neil McCready coming to you today. I am in the Clark Ford studio. Neil's still in California, but he got up early again this morning to help me out, so we're going to go to him in a minute. We're going to talk a little bit about SEC football media days, about who we would take, who's headed there, the changes that might be happening with media days now that they're in Atlanta instead of Birmingham, and much more here on the Oxford Exxon Podcast, a podcast brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. Get your Speed Pass Plus. When you do that, you download the app, you go to the gas station, you go to the pump, and you fill up there. You also pay there just with your mobile device. You don't have to worry about identity theft, credit card skimmers, or the like. You save money and help yourself out as well. It's quick, it's efficient, and it helps you with the Oxford Exxon and all Blue Sky locations in Mississippi, and also coming to you from the Clark Ford studio. 662-257-1900 is the phone number to give Corey a call. Let him give you a quote in as little as 15 minutes during business hours. Great selection. Shop it around, and then when you find out it's the best offer for you, come talk to Corey. They'll even deliver if everything feels right for you to get that done that way. And tell them you heard about it on the podcast there at the very end. They take $500 off your car buying purchase with Clark Ford. So we're going to talk a little baseball. We're going to talk football. We're going to talk about coaches in the SEC and much more with Neil McCready here in a second. So let's go to that now on the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Welcome in, Neil McCready from California still. I don't even know, Neil. What day are you coming back?
We're coming back on Saturday.
Okay.
And then I'm landing in Birmingham, and I'm going straight to Atlanta for two reasons. One, SEC Media Days begins Monday morning. And two, Carson's going to a soccer camp, and it's the UAB soccer camp, which they're having in Rome, Georgia, which is actually fairly smart the more you think about it. So it starts on Sunday, and so I'm taking him on Sunday over there, and then I'll just go to Atlanta and be at the at Media Days bright and early, because that's the start of football season, and you need to be there before it starts, right? That's what I'm told. So I'll be there for Media Days and get a lot of podcast interviews and stuff. Ole Miss goes on Tuesday. So I'll write a lot on Tuesday. I'll talk a lot on Monday. And then I pick him up late Wednesday, and we'll see whether I stay for Thursday or not.
That's what I was going to say, is it finally is the start of football season then, right? I mean, we make all the jokes in the world, and we've still got a little ways of times, but they've moved it back enough to where it's not as much of a joke anymore. They have pushed Media Days back to where we can sort of say this with a straight face, because we are only a couple of weeks away from fall camp beginning.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you can. Jay Tate and I have had this argument, you know, because Jay's one of these guys that does the countdown thing. And as long as you just admit that it's nothing but filler, I'm good with it. And frankly, next year and stuff like that, we might start doing some things like that, because the only problem that I have with it is I would love to do that filler if you could actually talk to the people that you're writing about and converse with them and write something that has some degree of substance to it. But yes, after Tuesday, I mean, we'll talk to Matt Luke. We'll talk to players. It's going to be surface level stuff for the most part, but at least you'll have something, some piece of meat, if you will, that you can put your knife and fork into. It's not just stabbing at the air, writing things that you, and you've been around me a long time. You know, this, I'm terrified of writing something in the early summer that is just completely wrong. And then finding out later, why don't you write that? That's we already addressed that. We addressed that after spring. Yeah. We didn't look good in the spring at this particular spot, but we spent the summer addressing it. We've got it. I'd rather ask about it at Media Days. Hey, you know, you guys were worried about blank in spring training. Do you feel like you've fixed it at all going into fall camp and get an answer that at least you can build off of. So, yeah, we can start doing that next week, and not just with Ole Miss, but with all the other teams in the SEC, because they'll be there. You'll hear from coaches, and you at least have something of – it's not a ton of substance, and it's not the beginning of fall camp, but it at least lets you start talking about the football season with some degree of something new and some degree of intelligence, if you will.
What coaches are most likely to at least get asked things of substance? I mean, you know, last year we were looking at Hugh Freeze, how would he face the media, what would he say, what kind of honesty would you get out of him? There was a few different deals. You had, you know, Dan Mullen that had some interesting questions to answer. It seemed like a more low-key offseason. There's never a ton of substance, but we might be on a record of even less than usual this time. I think we're going to get almost 14 kind of PR media day appearances.
Well, if you think about it, and I was thinking about this the other day, who's actually really either on the hot seat or where you think he's leaving? Like this time last year, I think we all felt like Dan Mullen was leaving. We all knew he'd done a really good job at Mississippi State. We knew he had hired as his agent. There were rumblings inside our business that he was really eager to get out. So there was some substance there. This time last year, the free stuff was beginning to bubble to a point where, and you and I will probably talk about this some. We might do it later this week. We might do it next week. I don't know. We'll probably have a show where we kind of remember what happened a year ago at Media Days, where it went from a murmur to, I can remember you and me having phone conversations where I think I said it to you, maybe you said it to me, maybe we said it to each other. There's something here. Not sure it's all right, but it's not all wrong. And there's something here. And as that week progressed in Birmingham last year, it's in Atlanta this year, but in Birmingham last year, it was, looking back on it, it's a wonder, Chase, that day, his appearance, because I think he appeared on Thursday. And it's a wonder that there wasn't more questions asked about phone calls. I don't think we quite had enough yet. He got asked about it, but nobody had enough meat yet to follow up and ask much. And it was media days and you're trying to get other things done. There was...
Was it 1 week before chaos?
Yes.
He was fired literally 1 week later?
1 week later. Yeah, that was... it was 1 week before chaos. Absolutely. I guess we'll kind of venture down this road a little bit, then we'll turn around. And then next week we'll go all the way down the road. It's funny because that story died for a few days. It went away for the better part of a weekend. And into like Monday, it was Monday of the next week before I really heard anything again. And usually when that happens in these stories, that means it got handled or turned out there wasn't as much to it. It's all going to basically go away. That story hit a deep lull over the weekend. There were no rumors about it at all, at least not for me, that Friday, that Saturday, that Sunday. And then on Monday, it picked up. And by Tuesday, I don't know if we knew where it was headed. And then by the end of the week, obviously, it was chaos. But it was weird, you know. I look back on it and think, I should have asked more questions. I knew, but that was the thing. I didn't know. I had heard enough to ask a lot of questions, but I didn't have enough substance to it to keep sticking with it. And it's one of those deals where you're a beat writer and you're covering that beat, and you already have a sort of a weird relationship with the guy that you're covering, and weird's not the right word, maybe more tenuous a little bit, where if you keep sticking down that road and there ends up not being much there, it's going to be a really awkward football season to cover. And so I think we as a beat just sort of did the media days deal that day. And And actually, you look back on it, and that day in Birmingham last year, Freeze was pretty good. I mean, he was weird with media stuff because by that point, he always kind of was weird with media stuff. But he was pretty good that day. He was kind of on his game. I think he went to Birmingham thinking that he was going to get really grilled on that stuff, and it didn't happen. And maybe he just kind of exhaled and did his thing, because I know that he went down, you know, and did the radio row thing that all the coaches do, and some of the different people that interviewed him, different radio guys that I know personally, and some of them that you know personally, were like, hey, Freeze was really good today. He was better than he usually is, that kind of thing. So it was a weird thing. And then 1 week later, he's a national story out of a job. And weird. It's a weird episode. That's only 1 year ago. It feels like it was several years ago now, but I don't know if it does to you. It does to me. But that was just 1 year ago. So I think, yeah, to your point, I don't think there's a lot of substance at in terms of like juicy rumors and stuff at media days. There's not a lot of coaches on the hot seat. I mean, I guess the guy at Vanderbilt.
Derek Mason.
Mason. Yeah, and I mean,
I think that's it. I mean, I really think he's the only one with even a weird situation, because you go through the league real quick. I mean, in the East, you got Kirby, you got Will, who are coming off good seasons. You've got new guys with Pruitt and Mullen. So Stoops took a little bit of a step. I mean, it's a really stable SEC right now.
I mean, I guess if Barry Odom had a bad season.
But, I mean, I think you're talking 4-8 kind of bad.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have a bad season. I think they're going to win some games because they're really, really good at quarterback.
Yeah, because they got his quarterback back.
Yeah, they're going to win games at quarterback. I mean, with that position. And then in the West, it's a lot of new guys. So barring scandal, those guys aren't losing their jobs in year one. And then you've got, obviously, Saban and Malzahn. And I mean, it's just not a lot of – I think the conversation's mostly going to be football-oriented.
The third most tenured SEC West head coach is Ed Orgeron.
He's the most – we've talked about it. That's the single most fascinating thing to watch going into the early part of the season, how LSU starts. Because if it's bad, man, it's bad, but – that's, I mean, I don't know how many times you can ask that at media days. How important is it, Ed, that you get off to a good start? Well, duh. Everybody wants to get off to a good start. I mean, you could ask that question to Saban. And I don't even think there aren't a lot of big overriding topics to address for, I don't even know what the national guys are working on right now. Unless you're doing a deep dive into concussion stuff, and I don't know what the coaches can tell you about that. I think most of the conversation is going to be kind of football based. And so for the X and O guys out there, that's probably good news for some of the people out there who are looking for salacious headlines and stuff. It's going to be you have to really do some deep digging to find it, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, what's happened with that a little bit is over the course of the years, and not to get too far into this, but from a national guy perspective, from a major storyline perspective, Destin has kind of replaced Media Day for that type of thing, where you had the transfer rules and you had actual legislation going on. A lot of that stuff kind of gets dried up by the time you're in Birmingham or Atlanta as it is now. So, no, this is more personality-based. This is more scandal based than really big picture based, and if it's not any scandal, it just kind of becomes boilerplate with, I assume, still 1,000 media members or so. Although it being in Atlanta, I have a feeling that it will be less of a. It's still going to be a circus, but might not be quite Barnum and Bailey when it's moved over a state.
Oh, I think this will serve two purposes. One, it gives them a place to do this big fan fest kickoff thing that they want to do.
Yeah, it's at the College Football Hall of Fame, for anybody that wasn't aware of that at this point.
Yeah, so it lets them use, what's that, Centennial Park. It lets them use that area for, you know, fan stuff. It lets them use the College Football Hall of Fame. It drives more traffic into that actual building. And as proud as they are of having 8 gazillion media members at this event, this probably drives away some of the bloggy type media people, maybe. I think. But we'll find out. But I think it allows them to do to incorporate the fans into it more. I've always kind of sensed that they felt like maybe they had taken Hoover as far as they could take it with Hoover. You know, Hoover's, frankly, as much as the media bitch about it, Birmingham's a perfect place for a lot of media because everyone can get there pretty quickly. But that hotel did not offer, when they did it at the Winfrey or whatever that's called now, the Sheraton or whatever, they didn't really have a place for fans other than down there in that lobby where they could be corralled into a little room and made to look more fanatical than they actually are. Other than that, there wasn't a place for them. Well, now you have lots of places for fan interaction and stuff. Now, how that impacts what they do with coaches on those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I guess that remains to be seen, but probably a better setup for TV. And they'll do the thing. They have a thing on Sunday, and I think it's Monday too, that's a fan event, a kickoff kind of thing out in Centennial Park. And I don't know how successful or not it will be, but Atlanta gives them an opportunity to experiment a little bit.
It's not in Birmingham where all of the Bama fans are stationed. I mean, obviously there'll be some in Atlanta, but you mentioned that the location's also going to cut down on a lot of that. I mean, there's not another school that's going to pick up that slack like all the Alabama craziness that's there on Nick Saban's day. So, I mean, that's the thing, too. It's going to get tempered a lot just even being a state over. I mean, we talk about media and different things, but that whole fan lobby thing, even though there's more room for them, there's going to be less of them now. They're not traveling across the state to do this, in my opinion.
Was that a challenge?
Do you think I'm wrong?
No, I think you're probably right. I mean, there will be some that'll still go because Nick Saban and 3 Alabama football players are going to walk through a lobby, but it will take more effort to drive to Atlanta than it would to drive to Birmingham when they already live and work in Birmingham.
Bad pod. I haven't seen an answer here. Who have you seen who Ole Miss is taking or who they should take?
I have not seen who they're taking. I would suspect they're taking Jordan Tamu. I would suspect they're taking A.J. Brown. They're insane if they don't. Here's what's interesting for Ole Miss is that Ole Miss has always kind of, I say always, to my memory, so that no one pushes back. To my memory, they've always taken offense and defense, and they've always pretty much taken.
It's tried to be. I mean, there's a couple exceptions, but for the most part, it's kind of been a seniority offense defense thing.
There's really no defensive player to take that media is going to want to talk to. The media wants to talk to A.J. Brown, and they want to talk to Greg Little, and they want to talk to Jordan Tanner. And if there was a fourth, it would be D.K. Metcalf.
That's about to say. I mean, to me, if I'm doing it, Tamu and A.J. are just certainties. And the identity of this team is offense. There is no defensive identity. There is no defensive player that's going to gain national or regional notebook lines unless they're just writing about every team. There's no one that's going to stick out. And then, yeah, it's Greg or D.K., and it's probably Greg, but D.K. wouldn't bug me if I was choosing him instead.
No, I agree completely. But anyone out of that group, outside of that group, I mean, at this point, I think from a media relations standpoint, you're trying too hard and you don't understand media relations. And if that sounds like a mean thing to say, I don't mean for it to. But if you force a defensive player because he plays defense, he's going to end up sitting at a table kind of by himself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got an example here. He's a really good talk. He's an interesting guy. But no one outside of the Ole Miss beat is going to recognize or really find something in depth about Josiah Coatney. Not going to happen.
It's not. And so people.
I mean, the best defensive story is Zedrick Woods.
Well, he's the best defensive story on so many levels.
Yeah.
But yeah.
On and off the field.
Both. I don't know how many people. because of the Tunsil connection. I just don't know how many people would dig into that.
Well, I mean, but also he's a dude that was supposed to, you know, when he was signed, I mean, let's be honest, every one of us thought he was kind of just an add-on, and he's been maybe their best player on defense at times.
Oh, there's no question.
Without him.
But again, I don't know how I don't know how many people dig into that.
That's my point. They wouldn't.
But, you know, if you're trying to think, if you're a national guy and A.J. Brown and Greg Little are there, you know, if nothing else, you can go dig into their NFL futures. You can talk about the decision that they have coming up. You can ask them about, have you considered, and the answer to that is, the answer that the players will give is no, I'm thinking about right now. The true answer is absolutely yes. I think about it every day. But you can talk about those guys as prospects and you know, they're a year away or less from playing in the National Football League. So I mean, you can do that. Tamu's an obvious. I mean, he'll be there. I mean, unless he's sick or something, he'll be there. And he's a great story too, because he'll get 1,000 Shea Patterson questions. There's, you know, that if you want to get headlines and you want to get copy and you want to get you want to market your program, you carry the players who market your program, and it's those guys. That's your group. I don't think you can force anyone else out there. I don't think it works.
It's basically over, other than the answer to this appeal. What is going to be the split of on-field versus off-field questions for Matt Luke?
I'm trying to think. I think he's going to get asked about – he'll get asked about the appeal. He'll get asked about the bowl ban. He'll probably get some Hugh Freeze questions, because people will be doing – it's been a year – like we just did. But then mostly it's going to be about rebuilding a program and the difference in being having the interim tag off and coaching at your alma mater, because it's his first media days. It'll be pretty benign. Frankly, I think people are sort of tired of the Ole Miss story. Nationally, they've moved on to other things.
We take a break from the show to tell you that the podcast is brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have 3 attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state, so you know you're getting a great one when you get Robert Gambrell. Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando at 662-342-7700 or in Oxford at 662-281-8800. Podcast is also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals as well. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about Grenada Nissan on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than 4 decades, and no one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry does. If you are in the market for a home or a condo in or around Oxford, go to his site, harryalexander.com, click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab, filter through by what you're looking for. The results that you see are updated daily, and then you just send Harry an email. He'll take care of the rest. ha@harryalexander.com. And Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Now back to the Oxford Exxon podcast.
Neil, we have we've not talked even really off air about this, but look like you and the family had a cool night at the ballpark. Other than the Cubs not winning since the last time we have spoken, they never win. But if nothing else, I think Carson probably would chalk that up to a win in his book the other night.
Yeah, he had a win. I'll tell you this funny story. So Carson loves Nike stores, and he likes all the soccer cleats that they have at the Nike stores that you don't see at Dick's or, you know, Academy or Walmart or whatnot. And so we went into the Nike store in San Francisco, and he tried on all these. I told him, hey, man, I'm not buying cleats right now because you still have cleats that fit. But we went in there, and the guy was really nice with us. It turns out that that guy moonlights at AT&T, and he's a Giants fan or whatever. And I said, well, I'll make you some free money. And he said, okay. And I said, this is on Monday. I said, take the Giants tonight. Go find a bookie. Take the Giants tonight. I said, but you have to parlay it, because on Tuesday night, when we won't be there, the Cubs will win. Those are two definites. And sure enough. So hopefully my friend Eric at the Nike store in San Francisco took my advice, because if he did, he made some money.
I didn't take my own advice. I'm going to let you talk about your night and Carson in a second, but I do have a wonder here. I mean, look, you're not an overly superstitious person other than the weird deodorant thing that still drives me crazy, which, you know, honestly, that's so weird that maybe you are an incredibly superstitious person just because of that one thing, now that I think about it. By the way, did you do it the last 2 days, and was that not a reason that they won or lost?
Yeah, I did it because you have to do it, but no, I mean – no baseball team ever goes undefeated, so it's never going to be foolproof. It's never going to be foolproof.
All right. Here is my question, though. And since you do the deodorant thing, I'm beginning to wonder if this is actually a possibility. They are a really bad record with you in attendance. They are a great record with you not in attendance, or the day after you were in attendance. They lost the one World Series game you went to. Are we approaching a point where, come playoff time or meaningful games, you don't go because of this record?
Yeah, we're almost there.
I mean, I really think right now, I'm trying to – this would be like a Jeffrey line of thinking. Like, let's say they're up 3-1 or 3-2 and come back to Chicago for the last two. I'll almost make sure I go to game 6 just because I know game 7 is there without me.
Well, that's a good thought. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that. I did think to myself that if they were in, say, the wild card game and someone offered me tickets, I can't go, because that's the kiss of death.
Yeah, it's a one or done.
And Carson damn sure can't go, because my record's okay. Like, it's sub 500. His record in attendance as a Cub fan is now like 3-15. Unbelievable. He is the manager getting fired in April. Bad.
Well, yeah, he's the April Reds.
I mean, we went to Cincinnati for a 4-game series. The Cubs were swept. Since that series, the Cubs are 10-4. And one of the games that they lost, we attended. So in games that we haven't attended since that sweep, the Cubs are 10-3. 10-3 is pretty good in baseball.
And 0-5 in games you've attended, or 0-4, or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, think about that. What are the odds?
Yeah, I think you're getting to – he can't go to any games really September on moving forward.
I have told the Cubs on Twitter that they should put – frankly, they should not put me on the payroll. They should put him on the payroll and pay him not to go to their games.
Yeah, about the trade deadline is the time Carson no longer allowed to go to baseball games.
Yeah, the Cubs should send him a check and say, hey, thanks for cheering for us. We appreciate your loyalty. Do not come to our games.
See, I had the opposite luck as a kid, because the Saints were terrible, and they always won when I went. I mean, even to this point, I think the Saints have like an 87% winning percentage when I'm at games.
That's incredible.
It was. I mean, I went to games when I was young where they were terrible. I mean, they sucked. They'd win every time.
Yeah, I mean, they were horrible when you were a little kid, because I was older and they were bad. I mean, when I was a kid in Louisiana, they were so bad.
Yeah, like the last 10 years or so, that's not necessarily fair, because they typically have won their home games under Breeze and Peyton. But before that, they were still winning. Yeah, I would see wins. So I can't necessarily relate, but I think we're getting to that. I think he is about to be boycotted from Wrigley or any road playoff games for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's become a topic of conversation because when they won last night, I thought that's getting bizarre.
So tell me about your night.
We had a great experience. So because you were there, the guys at Blue Delta Jeans obviously know the Giants people really well, and they know the Cubs people really well.
There are Giants and Cubs jerseys hanging up in the Blue Delta studios.
So this trip had been planned months ago, and tickets to that game Monday night had been bought months ago, before I even had met the Blue Delta Jeans guys. But they were like, hey, when are you going? And so I got a text from one of those guys not too long ago that said, hey, we go to Will Call, whatever. You get to go watch batting practice down on the field at AT&T, which was awesome. And so we went to the game about 3 hours early, and we got down on the field right about the time that the Giants were starting their batting practice. In fact, when we walked out on the field, Buster Posey was in the cage. So we watched the Giants take batting practice, and then the Cubs took batting practice as the road team after the Giants. And it was neat. So anyway, as you remember, talking about the World Series, when we went to the World Series, Carson wanted a World Series jersey with the patch on it. It was just one of those kids' replica jerseys that had the patch on the arm, like $45 or something. It probably cost them 6 cents to make. But regardless, surprisingly that day, this is 2016, surprisingly that day, the jersey that he wanted was Javi Baez. And so he always talks about Rizzo, but Baez, I think because of his style and his flair and stuff, which is another topic for the baseball purist, I guess.
But Baez, it appeals to 10-year-olds. I mean, duh.
It appeals to kids. Baez, this kind of the flair and the style and the way he spits the sunflower seeds and all that stuff. It's kind of Carson's guy. And so he originally was going to wear his Schwarber jersey to the game because the Cubs would be wearing, he knew they'd be wearing blue because Hendricks, when he pitches on the road, they wear blue. So he was going to wear his blue Schwarber jersey, but he kind of made a last minute change. Turned out to really pay off for him. He switched to his Baez jersey, which of course is the home white pinstripe jersey. He switched to that jersey and he wore that jersey all day in San Francisco. And then we got to the game, and we're down on the field. He's got his Baez jersey on. And the first person that came over and talked to us was Will Clark. I tweeted that out. It didn't get the reaction, but Baez did. Will Clark could not have been nicer, Chase. It was a really fun conversation for like 10 minutes. So we talked to him, and then Baez was in the second hitting group of BP. And Carson is not the type to yell at like a player and try to get their attention. He just likes to watch. And so Baez saw him and saw his jersey and pointed at him and said, I'm going to come talk to you after I hit. And so we kind of had time to get ready for it. And he went in and he hit again in the cage. And then after he finished hitting, he came over and he talked to Carson for a couple of minutes, and Carson got his picture taken with him, and then all three of the kids got their picture taken with him. The girls, my girls don't know who different Cubs are, but they knew who Baez was because they've heard so much about him, I guess. And it was really cool. He was really nice. He could not have been nicer to Carson. And it was a really neat, a really cool experience. I think I told you he was basically buzzing. He probably still is to some degree, but he was buzzing throughout the game. The Cubs lost 2-1 in 11, and they could have lost 100-0, and it could have been a 10-run rule after four, and he would have still been perfectly happy. He was really pumped that he got to meet Baez, and one of the one of the assistant coaches. I think it was Venable threw him a BP ball. We were down there on the field. So he had a really great experience. It doesn't happen without our relationship with Blue Delta Jeans. Those guys are incredible guys. We talk about their product all the time, and their product is I wear it constantly. I love it. It's phenomenal, but they're even better people. And everyone thinks so highly of them, and you see why. But it was really cool. It was a neat experience. It was one that he'll never forget. So it was really, really cool.
Yeah, BlueDeltaJeans.com. You pay a premium for different things, so the perfect pair of denim that you're going to wear all the time, it's a kind of a no-brainer. How was that park? Had you been there before? I've actually never been there. It's on a bucket list, but I've never been.
Yeah, it needs to be on your bucket list. It was my third time there. It's my fourth game there. It's probably my favorite park. I love it.
You like it better than Pittsburgh?
Close.
Okay.
But yeah, I think so. I think because San Francisco is just a little cooler than Pittsburgh. It might just be that simple. The park in Pittsburgh is fantastic. I mean, from a fan experience, there's not a bad seat. AT&T is kind of that way too. There's just no bad seats. The amenities are great. The different options you have and concessions and stuff. And you see that when we were 3 hours early and then, you know, we got off the field and there was still an hour basically before the game. So, I mean, we walked around the park and saw what all was available, and it's really, really well done. It's probably my favorite. It's really cool. And it's the weather is because of where it is. I mean, if anything, it got a little chilly Monday night, but the weather was perfect. You know, sometimes in the summertime, you're sitting at a baseball game and you're just dripping. And I mean, we all had jackets. It was great. It's a really good park. I like it and Pittsburgh, and different people have different opinions about Nationals Park, but I love it in D.C. I think it's great. And I like Great American Ballpark. It's really well done too. It shows you how, like in places like Boston and obviously with Wrigley, how much work they had to do to get the thing up to at Fenway and now at Wrigley to get the thing to a place where it has enough modern amenities to survive. I just don't know how many people are going to go to the museum night after night after night. I think, especially if they get to go to other places and see Creature Comfort, they're going to want the same thing. So the one that I haven't seen yet that I want to check out is Atlanta. Because Turner Field was just awful.
I really liked SunTrust last year. I thought it was well done. I thought the museum area was you know, maybe a touch small, but pretty well done. It exceeded my expectations, and I was kind of open-minded. I didn't necessarily have incredibly high expectations, but when you get through there and you walk around and you see everything, you kind of go, yeah, this all makes sense. I completely get it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've heard nothing but good things about it. I want to check it out soon. I probably won't go when the Cubs play there because of obvious reasons. But yeah, I want to check that out. I've heard nothing but good things, and they needed to do something because Turner Field was bad at the end. But I like the one in Minnesota. They've all built good parks, but I mean, just it shows you in that sport, you better keep up. It's interesting too, you know, because we had talked earlier that day about baseball and its failures or whatever. And the Giants are a good club. They're in the race. They're not a championship caliber club anymore, but that place was packed, man. I mean, it was 38,000 people on a Monday night in San Francisco. And I know it's because the Cubs were in town and they're a big draw, and the Cubs bring a lot. There were Cub fans all over San Francisco all day. But it's so funny because you read stuff about how the game is dying and the TV ratings are down and attendance is down. And then you go to a game and there's so many people, including young people. And you wonder, is it, quote, fake news? And I know it's not, because if you watch a game in Tampa or something, there's nobody there. It's just a complicated topic. I mean, we've had people kind of tweet at us, and you got involved. I saw yesterday with about back when we were kids, maybe even when you were a kid, baseball cards were a big deal, and they're not now. So maybe the kids don't recognize players. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I got that tweet where you and I both got that tweet yesterday from Hunter Carpenter, a different Hunter Carpenter, not that one. And it did make a good point. It kind of hit me, and I went, that makes some sense. I actually had it up as we were getting this conversation. It said, regarding the discussion on why MLB has no superstars, we grew up with SportsCenter that showed hours and hours of highlights every morning and every night, and we all watched it, sometimes back-to-back. Now ESPN is all talking heads arguing, also baseball cards. I think both those are relevant to an extent. The media era, the baseball card era, all that has changed to the point of the main criteria for maybe how we recognize players, for how we saw day after day after day activities these players, has changed so much that baseball is just by far the least beneficiary of that switch. Because I mean, yeah, you'd watch 3-4 hours just because it was the only thing on, and you're just sitting there of SportsCenter where you catch this same highlight 3 or 4 times. I mean, you would watch Mookie Betts hit a double into the gap 5 times over a 24-hour period, and that just no longer happens whatsoever.
So. Yeah, it doesn't. It was a good point. When I read it, I thought about it. I thought, that's true. You used to watch the highlights, and now there are no highlights. And it's to your people get their highlights on social media, and baseball doesn't make them easily accessible.
I don't know what the answer is. Yeah, I mean, not getting back on the topic, but I just found it interesting, if nothing else. So, did you see with our title sponsor and the boys? Video getting kind of viral on social media, by the way?
No, I didn't.
Any idea?
No.
Couple days ago, Travis Ryer of Bama Online was in, I think, Walnut at one of the Blue Sky things. And this probably only happens in Mississippi, and it's kind of funny in a lot of ways. I mean, it worked out well for Ben. But Travis was going through for vacation or a football camp or something. They do a good job over there. And he took a video of the food selections at the Blue Sky in Walnut, Mississippi. And Ben tweeted at him and goes, hey, that's our store. Come back by. We'll, you know, let you try the peach cobbler or whatever it was that he referenced in the tweet. That tweet showing gas station food on Twitter has gotten 112,000 views to this point.
Really?
112,000.
That's awesome. Isn't that funny? But it is kind of a Mississippi thing, is it not? I mean,
it's for sure a Southern thing, but Mississippi is very prominent in that discussion, yes.
Well, I was thinking about that. I mean, I'm sure there's other places, but like, I lived in Alabama for a long time, and I don't know that I ever, maybe I did and I just didn't notice it, but I don't know that I ever went into a quote convenience store, end quote, that had those sorts of food offerings. I mean, maybe it was the kind that had that what's it called, Hunt's Pizza or whatever, or
you know, some biscuits and maybe some chicken strips.
Yeah. I mean, you know, standard stuff, but not plate lunches and ribs and all the stuff that Blue Sky offers. That I'm guessing a majority of their locales. It's just a different thing. I mean, I remember seeing the tweet. That's funny that went viral. That's cool.
Yeah, because it's not a socioeconomic thing. It goes across all different barriers. But I mean, in Mississippi especially, gas stations are a very acceptable, just society place for lunch and dinner and snacks in between. From, you know, probably a lot of places being your, you know, a 70-year-old woman that's been cooking this great stuff and better than a restaurant for years and years and decades.
Yeah.
I mean, really. So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, let's go get, you know, the smoked turkey leg and the peach cobbler and the macaroni and cheese and the baked beans. And so, in all seriousness, I mean, when we first started this podcast with Ben, I mean, for years we pumped up $4.99 lunch specials, two sides of bread, 32-ounce drink. It was a cheap meal that was very, very, very good. every single day. And yeah, it was not about one type of person, one class of person. I mean, everybody stopped in and sales went up, and we sold a lot of plates over the years.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I got ribs for the 4th of July from Oxford Exxon. They were great.
Yeah, I've done that multiple times. So I saw Ben, I think, tweeted out this morning and went, oh my God, 112,000 views showing essentially ribs and gas station chicken.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Welcome to July, ladies and gentlemen. But congrats to Ben. I'm sure Travis had a nice meal. And anyway, yeah, cool stuff there.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
France. I know you're not watching soccer.
I'm not watching soccer.
This isn't really about soccer. France is in the World Cup final. They defeated Belgium yesterday. England plays today against Croatia. I think most expect that the Croatian team is going to be pretty leg weary, and England's going to be pretty fresh. And that if you're handicapping the game, you're going with England.
Okay.
If it's an England France final on Sunday, I know you're not watching. You appear to be in the minority at this point, but that's okay. We all have different things. If it's an England France final, who as an American should you cheer for?
Well, we'll go there. I have a very easy answer to this, and I'll tell you after the break, real quick. Take a break in this podcast. Tell you the name to know in Memphis real estate is Stacy Berry, a Keller Williams agent who's looking to help you find your special place to call home, whether it's downtown, midtown, Germantown, or Collierville. Keller Williams is the number one real estate agency in the world, number one in agents, units sold, and volume sold. And the Berry home team is now an integral part of that world-renowned brand. If you're a first-time home buyer looking to downsize, Stacy will evaluate and determine your current home value and sell it quickly for top dollar. So if you're looking to sell a home, buy a home, or invest in real estate, call the Berry home team today and let Stacy unlock Memphis for you. You can reach her at 901-481-6420. Stacy Lane Berry at KW.com. That's Stacy with an E, LAINE, Berry at KW.com. Or check it out, theberryhometeam.com. The podcast also brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. 662-607-7773 is the number to give MasterCuts a call and let them help you out, whether it's building an outdoor living area, outdoor kitchen area, or just take care of your yard all year long with weed eating, edging, and mowing. They do that for me all the time. They are excellent. And tell them you heard about the podcast. They might cut you a deal there as well. 662-607-7773. Podcast also brought to you by Locker Stockers. Take the hassle out of stocking your locker or your suite this football season. A new thing set up for to help you, the customer, really takes the hassle out of something that you might have to go and fit a time period, wait in line a little bit to get in. Instead, they handle the purchase and delivery of the locker or the products to the locker or suite before game day. They're also going to help give you an early sign-up special with a 10% discount on a season package if you sign up before August 1st. 662-586-1487. Or email info@lockerstockers.com for information. And the podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting, understands your market, a leader in condo financing, and the float down option. So you can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLo at communitymtg.com. Now back to me and Neil. So here's the deal with this. I mean, I have never been to France or England. I would really like to go to Wimbledon one day. I would really, really like to go to Paris or somewhere for the food and the whole deal, but I've never done it. I've never been to either place. I know there's all this about, well, how do you cheer for England because of this and this and rivals and blah, blah, blah. I have none of that regard whatsoever. To me, I mean, just from a stereotypical standpoint, the English people seem nice enough these days. The French people have the really bad stereotypes on their personalities and their disdain for Americans and all that kind of stuff. I mean, shouldn't we be a little thankful for the English in a lot of ways? I mean, they didn't really take that war very seriously early on, or maybe the entire time, and kind of were ready to get out of there. I mean, in a lot of ways, their lack of desire led the way to our independence. And then, oh, since then, we've pretty much been allies every time there's been a chance. I don't understand the disdain for the English people at this point in 2018.
Well, look, I'm cheering for Britain because I just have. As a lifelong Tottenham Hotspur fan.
They speak our language for the most part. I have no issues here. I'm 100% Great Britain, England, whatever it is at this point.
You went down the path that I was going to go, though. The thing is, without the French, do you know France is the only major country that we've never been at war with?
Really?
They're it. They're the only country that has always been on our team. And without the French, the American Revolution is not a victory.
Ooh, okay.
Think about that. It's the French that cut off the British Navy and allowed us to surround Cornwallis at Yorktown. And I'm boiling history down to a very base level. So I get it for those of you who are PhDs in American history. You're going to say, well, there's a little more to it than that. Yes, there is. But that's basic stuff. The French came to our support. Now, they did it for self-serving reasons. But, you know, that's okay. They wanted Great Britain to be weakened, and by losing the colonies, they were absolutely weakened on the world stage. But we don't win that war without the French. It just doesn't happen.
So you're arguing that France is actually a better friend of America?
Well, they've been a truer friend of America. I mean, if you're willing to go back to America's infancy, France was there when we were revolting. Britain was not. We were revolting against Britain. I don't know. It's a. Maybe we've got.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we weren't throwing macaroons into the bay. So.
No, we weren't. We were throwing tea into the damn bay, and British tea at that. I kind of think we as a country have this thing all wrong because we're obsessed with, you know, the royal family and that stupid royal wedding got better ratings in America than it did.
Do you think we do this? Do you think that we do this a lot of times just because they speak our language or we speak their language, whatever? There's got to be some part of that where you feel more connected to them because you can understand them.
That's certainly an issue. I mean, I rented a car yesterday morning in San Francisco so that we could drive, and I got the
convertible. Convertible?
Yeah, it's a convertible.
All right,
no,
thanks.
It's not a convertible at all. But I rented a car.
A 1997 Chrysler Sebring. Go ahead.
the guy that he couldn't speak a word of English. Not one word. Not one word. So I got in the Uber, and he had on a 49ers jersey. And I got in, and I said, "Hey, Niners, getting better, huh?" And he just kind of went,
"Ooh."
And I said, "Yeah, it's not a good sign."
You didn't even like get the Jeff Passan thing when he's in Korea, where like the guy goes, "Joe Montana, okay, good, we can go here."
So I said, "You pretty excited about Garoppolo?" And he kind of looked at me, and I realized he didn't hear one word of that. Not one word. Not even Garoppolo, which shows that, hey, it's just a jersey.
So was it a barrier or was it an issue?
Well, it was a bit of an issue because I was trying to get to the rental car place and not have to fight the whole airport thing. Because in San Francisco, you have to get on the tram and take the tram all the way to the rental car place. And then ultimately had to get on the tram and take the, I would have been better off just taking the hotel shuttle, and it would have been A, cheaper, and B, far less. It would have been far more convenient. But regardless, yeah, it was a barrier. I mean, when there's a complete language barrier, that's difficult to overcome. That's why Passan's story is so good. I mean, they were actually able to have a conversation in two different languages thanks to a common passion. But this guy.
Yeah, I still to this day, when I think about the Passan thing, start laughing when Passan realizes he's just naming 0-1 Diamondbacks. And go, like, I mean, it's like meeting some foreign guy if you're meeting, all of a sudden he goes, Jeff Blauser, Mark Lemke. And I go, oh, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Rafael Belliard, here we go.
Yeah, you find out his time reference by just going Claudel Washington.
Yeah.
And if he goes blank, then you go, okay, we got to go further. and then if you say, yeah, Ronald Acuna, and he looks at you in complete, you realize, okay, he's no longer following the Braves. This is a specific Braves.
Yeah. And, you know, and Jeff Passan's, I mean, and there I mean, obviously people from Arizona and different things, but from a national standpoint, I mean, one of several hundred at the most people that could have gotten in that car with the baseball knowledge and skill set to pin down that team and why. To go, okay, their closer was Korean. That's why he's doing this.
Which is amazing. It's still that story, if you've never read it, you should. That story is incredible. Because that guy, that whole country was so proud of Byung-Hun Kim that they watched that Diamondbacks team. And then when his career was over, they stopped.
Yeah, as we've talked about, a team with a friend of the podcast, David DeLucci, on it as well. But, the language barrier thing, the worst I've had with it, and you might have been in this exact same boat, is that 08 regional in Miami when I had a lot of Spanish in college, but I could not speak it to a level to get internet at that park, where it was the second day and probably the seventh inning before I could do enough language with the University of Miami tech guy to get my internet hooked up because he could not speak English. And like I'm going back through my memory and what I can do, and I can't tell him exactly why my computer is doing what it is. He can't tell me exactly why my computer is doing what it is, or potentially even read what's on my computer. And we spent half an NCAA tournament. I mean, that's what these things are. Half an NCAA tournament with no internet access because of that reason.
I mean, I remember that now.
Just amazing.
I remember you having that problem. For whatever reason, I didn't have a problem getting connected. I don't guess.
Yeah,
but I remember you having the problem.
Well, back then with Macs especially, it was kind of a crapshoot. Like, you can remember going into a lot of press boxes where half the people couldn't log in and then half had no issues whatsoever. And there was really no reason for either case. It would just be some folks could get it and some can't. And, I mean, God bless him. He tried. Like, you know, Ole Miss's guy, Joey Brent, would walk over and kind of peck on some keys and just kind of look at you and smirk. And you go, oh, this probably isn't good today. But alas, here we are. So, you know, okay, last thing on this. You're saying then in some ways, if I'm reading you correctly, that France is justified with their disdain for the Americans because of what they did 200 and how many ever years ago, being kind of justification for what they're doing.
Maybe we're not grateful enough.
You think we didn't send them a good enough thank you card, and now that's what's caused this whole thing. We've tried to steal some of their food over the years, take claim of things that maybe aren't ours.
I mean, we helped them out, obviously, in World War II, World War I. I mean, we've been there for them. I mean, we've had their back. But maybe in their eyes, they see us fascinated with England and not them, and they think, forgive my language here, but you ungrateful bastards. That might be what they think. And on some level, maybe they have a point. That said, I'm cheering for England.
Could it be jealousy on France's part? I mean, America did become a superpower with France's help, and then they just left them from an economic standpoint globally.
It could be. I mean, we sort of became the supermodel. Maybe we dated France in high school a little bit, and then when we became a supermodel, they weren't good enough for us anymore. And maybe they view us as kind of stuck up and forgot our roots.
So they're bunny boilers kind of now.
A little bit.
Okay.
You've
watched this. I haven't. Are we getting... Or is it just the red and white English flags that are flying, or are we getting Union Jacks too? What's in the crowd here for England?
That's a good question. They're all of the above.
Okay.
I've been surprised by how many people from other countries have gone to Russia for this. But this is my lack of, I mean, you can look at it on a map, but you don't ever really know how far that is. Like how difficult, if you live in, say, London, how difficult is it? How expensive is it to get to Moscow? I mean, you're on the same continent, so it's doable, but I mean, it's, I don't know what the train system is or if it's just they're flying planes and getting there. I don't know.
I mean, as we've talked about, my world geography is so bad that I would have no way to answer this. But I mean, you're right. I mean, just the investment to get there from anywhere is incredibly substantial. But it's a World Cup. I mean, even as little as I care, it's still this bucket list thing, this thing that, frankly, it grips the rest of the world so much. That's really the only reason I find it of interest to me. It doesn't have a personal interest to me as far as the sport or even the event, but just from a culture standpoint and what it does to so many other places in the world, that makes me want to experience it more or be a little more, go out of my way to be able to be involved with it in some fashion.
Look, I mean, I'm not a soccer guy. I mean, I'm not. My kid plays a ton of it. I see a lot of it. He's obsessed with it, so I hear a lot about it. But I'm the snobby American that watches a one – you can't say 1-0. I get corrected every time. A 1-0 game. And I can appreciate the athleticism. When people say these guys aren't tough, you're not watching. If you think that they do all the fake, like they get sniped and stuff and they roll around on the ground. Sometimes I think my theory on some of that is that it's understood that you do that. It buys everyone on the field an opportunity to breathe. Gives everybody a chance to catch their breath for a second. Maybe it's all part of a scheme. Because you think about it, you sprint basically for 45 straight minutes, running with intervals of sprints. I don't care how conditioned you are, you're winded. You get an opportunity to catch your breath, you take it. I don't know. I don't know enough about the game to understand the intricacies of it, but I told you, I mean, I was flying in a plane. There's nothing else to do. And I watched Croatia and Russia in that quarterfinal. It was enthralling to watch just the drama, to watch the Russians were down. It was 2-1. They were in extra minutes or whatever, the stoppage time, and they scored. To make it 2-2, or they were, it was in the overtime period, and then they had the penalty kick shootout thing. I mean, it was dramatic. It was great. It was very entertaining. And I don't care about Russia or Croatia as to who wins the soccer game. And it's getting great ratings here. So, I mean, some of it is just the drama of an elimination tournament. Americans love brackets, so we're watching because of brackets, perhaps, but it's been fun. And an England France final on Sunday, I'll watch. It's pretty, it would be fun to watch it. It would be entertaining.
Yeah. I am rooting for the England France final for whatever reason. I have no real reason for it, but sure. Why not?
Croatia France is not as sexy to me as England France. England France is I'm watching.
See, you're kind of justifying the whole thing here because England is the team in the entire tournament that you do find the sexiest just from a strict finals matchup standpoint.
Yeah, I just I'm guilty. I'm a walking, talking billboard for the reason the French hate us. We should be more grateful to France, and here I am cheering for their soccer demise on Sunday.
Is that national mourning when you lose in the final of the World Cup, or are you happy to be there? How does that work? Is it like a Final Four in basketball or Omaha, or do you have to win the thing once you get that close, or you're kind of a failure?
I think when you get, I don't know about failure, but when you get that close, if you don't win, kind of like getting to the World Series and you get to Game 7 and you lose it. Like, I don't think the Dodgers right now are going, you know, glad we got there last year. Probably pretty bitter that they didn't win it. It was funny. I was along those lines. I read a story I don't know who it was about. One of the Indians relief pitchers admitting that all of 2017, in the entire season, he said, I could tell you what we were doing. And he said, and I could tell you throughout 2017, I could tell you what the Cubs were doing. I could tell you where they were, how they were doing, who was pitching, that kind of thing. He said that series, it took him that long just to kind of get over it from a day-to-day life standpoint. He said, I had no reason to keep up with that team, and I kept up with them all year. So I kept trying to stop doing it, and I couldn't. So I think when you get that close and you don't win, I think it's more haunting than like losing in the quarterfinals where you're probably over it within a week.
Well, yeah, you're linked to them. I mean, as long as possible, yeah, you're linked. That's it.
You're part of the story forever.
Oh, man. That's why you really, I mean, and I get every team can't do this. I mean, every World Series loser can't win. But I found that Indians team really likable. I kind of hate they haven't won one. I kind of sort of feel like they deserve one.
Oh, I mean, in New York second, it's funny because if you say to me, okay, any team can win the World Series, who do you want? I'll say Cubs. And then if you say can't be the Cubs, without even a moment's hesitation, I will say Cleveland. Every time. If you told me today, hey, you get to control it, any baseball team can win the World Series this year except the Cubs, they're out, I'll say Cleveland. Instantly. And would enjoy watching them win a World Series, as long as it wasn't against the Cubs, would enjoy watching them win a World Series about as much as someone who's not a lifelong fan could enjoy it. When you see a team get that close, and like you said, they're very likable. Lindor and Francona and Kipnis and even Bauer, as much as he's kind of a jerk. I kind of like Bauer because he's authentic. I mean, I think he is just sort of that guy. I think the guy that he is the guy that he is. Kluber, I like Kluber. I like everything I've ever read about him. I like him. I'm like you. I like that team. I'm glad they lost the World Series because of who was in the other dugout. But yeah, you cheer for them a little bit when you see a team get that close. I mean, they were. Kipnis missed that ball in the bottom of the ninth that would have won the World Series by a fraction of an inch. I mean, you wonder how many times he thinks about that. Literally every day. I bet every single day he relives that pitch from Chapman where Chapman hung a slider and he just missed it.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, there's no way you could help from it. It would be an ongoing thing every single day. Who's the NL team that you would like to win the most? Or maybe hate to see win the least?
Oh.
Got to be a contender. You can't pick.
Yeah, no.
You can't say San Diego for.
No. I'm trying to think. Who would I like in the NL where it wouldn't bug me? I don't know. You know, I'd be happy for the Braves. A lot of people that, especially the Braves fans who kind of stuck with them during this rebuild, they're a fun young team to watch. Who else would I be happy for? I might cover it.
I mean, I'm taking out the entire NL Central, obviously.
Yeah, the Central's out. I wouldn't be happy for any of those people. I don't have anything against the Giants. They're really good. I like the organization, what I know of it. I don't like the Dodgers. I don't have anything one way or the other about the Padres, but they're not a contender. I tell you who I like because I like their social media presence. Their social media account's super funny. Maybe one of the two or three best in all of sports, the Rockies.
Okay. I'll accept that.
Their Twitter presence is fantastic.
Yeah. Let's take one last quick break, and I'll come back with a story to wrap us up in a second.
We take a break from the podcast to tell you that the podcast is brought to you in part by Billy's Pecans. Guests join us throughout the week on the Billy's Pecans hotline check out their selection of pecans. It's the cinnamon spice pecans are fantastic. My favorite, the toasted pecans. Simple, but you just can't beat them. Dark chocolate, white chocolate, chocolate amaretto, chocolate Grand Marnier, and more. They also have other things, all sorts of goodies. Pecans and chocolate, southern pecan toffee, cheese crispies, pecan brittle, coffee cakes, sauces, jellies, and more. All of that at Billy's Pecans. It's billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, all without that 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. Also, OUB offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And the podcast is brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South celebrating 10 years of business this season. If you try 7 South Tailgating once, you'll never tailgate without them again. 7 South will set up your own personal gear, or you can rent everything from them. No one matches their customer service, their attention to detail. Whether you're coming up for one game, just all of the SEC games, or you're coming up for all of the games, and whether you have a very intricate tailgate or the simplest of tailgates, 7 South Tailgating can hook you up, make the process of tailgating in the Grove far more enjoyable than having to do it yourself. 7SouthTailgating.com. Now back to the Oxford Exxon podcast.
So, okay, little bit of story time just to see where you would have lost patience in this encounter yesterday. So yesterday afternoon, I had to pick Carly Ann up from gymnastics at OPC, and I'm really not a fast food person at all. I don't eat much of it. We don't really buy a lot. Try to keep it away from the kids. Like I like Crystal for breakfast if I'm over there, and I do that some, partly in support of Ben, partly because I do kind of like it. But otherwise, I just don't really partake in it really. But last night, I was kind of in a hurry, I was kind of frazzled, I was tired, and I said, okay, I'm just going to run by a fast food establishment, I'm going to pick something not completely egregious from a health standpoint for the child, and we're going to call it a night. So, go through the window, pay, fine, and they do the dreaded, can you pull up for a second? Yeah, sure, that's fine. I'll pull up. And I don't do it voluntarily, but it just sort of sticks in my head. I kind of note the time, and a couple cars, I start counting a little bit as they get their food and then pass around me, okay? What number of either would you have, A, gone inside, called, just driven off? Because you got to remember, I've got a two-year-old in the car that I have a certain amount of attention span before she just loses her mind because we're not moving. I'll tell you the results in a second, but I have paid and gotten my drink. I have not gotten her drink yet or any of the food. So I have an unsweet tea in the car. I don't have her lemonade, and I don't have either of our entrees.
I would have a patience window of somewhere between 7 and 10 minutes.
And then what do you do?
At 10 minutes. And the kid's in the car, so you can't leave her in the car.
Yeah, so if you're getting out of the car, you've got to go park, get her out of the car seat, unstrap, and then take her in while you try to deal with this and leave with food in your arms.
And leave with food in your arms and have to restrap her into a car seat and such. I'm certainly picking up my phone and calling into the store at the 10-minute mark. And I'm almost the type to say, screw it. Take the, so you're out $9 at this point, $10?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I'm almost inclined to go, screw it, I'm going somewhere else. And tell myself I'm never coming back here again.
Well, that was...
And I'm really good about telling myself I'm never coming back here again and then never going back there again.
Yeah, well, I had that thought. And what I did, had I not done this, which was probably another really bad parenting move, I'm probably calling myself out on multiple fronts here, is at about 5 or 6 minutes, she was starting to lose her mind a little bit, and I turned YouTube Kids on my phone and handed her my phone because I knew it would occupy her for a couple minutes, and okay, let her watch this video. I counted, and at about 8 minutes, I thought, okay, there'll be a break in a second, and when that happens, I'll just reverse back to the window and be like, hey, what's up? Well, cars keep coming. Finally, at about 12 and a half minutes and after 9 people have been helped between me, there's a break. I back up to the window, and she sees me, and she goes, it's coming right up. And I said, what did I order that was the problem? And she didn't really have an answer. And then from the back, I hear someone come up and go, hey, where is that person? And then almost with kind of disdain, they go, he backed up back up here. Almost kind of pissed at me, for lack of a word. And I'm going,
ooh, and now I'm melting down.
Yeah, now I'm saying, okay, kids in the car. Because you know me, I really don't have a temper. But once I lose that temper, I'm really mad. I kind of go from 0 to 100. I don't have a lot in the middle. I stay at 0 for a really long time. And I just get the food, and I kind of yank it, and I just, she can tell I'm pissed, but I don't really say anything. But I've gotten madder that I didn't do more as time has passed, to the point of now I'm considering action after the fact just because I'm annoyed.
Did they not come out and apologize to you?
No real sorry or anything. There was from someone in there, not the lady I dealt with at the window, she was nice enough, but from someone else, there was a clear irritation that I had the nerve to back up to the window and not just stay in my location.
Ooh, yeah, they're lucky that you're not calling them out on a podcast right now.
Yeah, and that's the deal where I do like, you know, when we do that, because we do it sometimes, and it typically gets reactions, I like to make sure I call out a person or the right person instead of necessarily entities. So that's why I'm being a little careful for the moment. But yeah, I was perturbed. It was not the best 20 minutes of my evening last night. So I guess at least the order was correct.
Will you go back to this establishment?
No, not for a while at least. I'm done for a bit. And honestly, I'd go here if, like, again, I don't do this, but on the percentage over a long period of time of times that this is where I would go, I would do it fairly often just because of the handiness out of that percentage. So, yeah, there we are. Just a thought. I was curious how you'd handle it. So,
yeah, I mean, I go from 0 to 100 a lot faster than you do, but yeah, I would have been very similar in my reaction until the moment that I got, I would have been less receptive to the comment from the back probably than you were. I would have been more vocal in my response. You did the right thing, but I would have had a difficult time not expressing my displeasure at that tone.
Well, it was a little bit of stupidity because you wonder, okay, you're saying that to an employee, but I can obviously hear you. I mean, the window's open.
I'll tell you this. We stopped, Carson and I, on the way back from Cincinnati. It's 7 o'clock, and he's hungry. And we're just on the other side of Nashville. And there were two places. There was Wendy's, and there was Arby's. And I told him, let's just go to Wendy's. It's just a safer bet. But he's like, let's do Arby's. We went, I'll say, we went into Arby's. man, 25 minutes later, we don't have our food yet. And I just said, I want my money back. I finally, at that point, said, they clearly are either overwhelmed, understaffed, or both. The whole fast food thing is to get it fast. And when it took 25 minutes, I was so mad. I steamed. And then you get back in the car, and Carson's starving. We go to the next exit, the first place that's available is an Arby's. And we pulled through, got it in a minute and a half.
So you stayed brand loyal, even so.
Well, I mean, it was one place was over. It's all about people. One place was overwhelmed and couldn't handle it, and the other place was completely on top of their game.
Did you see the mistake the Indians made last night with their bullpen communication?
No, I did not.
All right, I'll read this quickly. It's kind of funny. So Trevor Bauer had dominated the Reds with 12 strikeouts over 8 scoreless innings. But the Reds scored 7 runs off Cody Allen and Dan Otero and tallied with 2 outs en route to a 7-4 road victory. With 2 outs and the bases loaded and 2 more walks, Indians manager Terry Francona wanted a new reliever to close it out. There was just one problem. Francona said afterwards there was a miscommunication. He requested OP, meaning Oliver Perez, and it was understood by his pitching coaches OT, Otero's nickname. So Otero was told to warm up in the bullpen. When the pitching change was made, Francona realized something had gone wrong, as it was not the guy he was expecting to come through the gate. Pitching coach Carl Willis said he was responsible for calling the bullpen to warm up Otero instead of Perez. Quote, I made the mistake. I brought the wrong guy up. Not that he couldn't get the job done, just wasn't the right matchup. But said he should have confirmed but didn't, but took the 2 letters and screwed up what the 2 letters actually were on who to call up in the bullpen.
Yeah, actually surprised that hasn't happened more often. You would think that.
Use full names.
Yeah, use the whole name. Especially when you're trying to close out a Major League Baseball game. Say, get Oliver Perez up.
Yeah, or numbers. Say numbers.
Yeah, that. I'm surprised, given the similarity of OT and OP, that hasn't happened.
Yeah, I would be cautious on interpreting nicknames on who to warm up in bullpens. But there's 162 games; you're around each other. He's probably done that 100 times without issue in the past.
Well, and in baseball, every single human being in baseball has a nickname.
That's true.
That's a baseball thing. Everybody has a nickname in baseball. Like in football, you don't ever hear about nicknames that much, or basketball, you don't hear about nicknames. But in baseball, everybody has a nickname.
Trevor Bauer, probably not the happiest guy in the world at the moment. But.
No, probably not. His numbers this year. Oof. Having a hell of a season.
Yeah. All right, well, that's what I saw just on the internet as of a minute ago. We'll have another podcast tomorrow as well, probably postponing Jeffrey to Friday, best that I understand. But podcast to close the week here with the Oxford Exxon podcast. Appreciate Neil getting up early to knock this one out, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.